We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
It's the True Faith Podcast with me, Simon Campbell. Tonight, I am joined for the Aston Villa preview by Adam Widdrington. Good evening, Adam.
Hello. How are you doing, Si?
Great, great. And Kyle Thompson?
Yes.
Nearly forgot your surname there.
Hang on. Spotty dog.
Good to see you, lads. This show would normally go on our Patreon channel, but as a special treat, we are putting it out for free for all to hear tonight. But if you would like to hear it without the adverts that interject the show and loads of other patter, you can join us on Patreon, which we are now have a variety of price ranges for that. If you just want to support us for a couple of quid a month, you can do, as well as the full premium that gets you something like four or five additional shows per week for what works out at about a couple of quid a week. So if you like what we do, come and join us. We'd love to have you. But tonight we are, of course, talking about another very, very winnable home game for Newcastle United off the back of three cracking results. It is the team we all want to beat. We all really want to beat. The club that's desperate to be our rivals, desperate since 2009, since the weird sob on the Tyne stuff, the weirdest behaviour of a home support I think I've ever seen. They'd finished like 10th or something. They should have been happy, but they spent the whole time obsessing over Newcastle. They can fuck off. But yes, this is Aston Villa. We've had a year of, they got Gerrard, they got Digne, they got Coutinho, they got Diego Carlos. Okay, he's been injured. He's probably kind of good. And you know, thank fuck they got all of that because I wouldn't take a single one of them now knowing where we are. So yes, they've had a bit of a stinking start the season. Gerrard's gone. This is an Aston Villa side, by the way. I did a bit of research before the show, lads, before we get into it. They've got the 9th most expensive side in the league. We're 7th, which I was quite surprised at, but I think the signing of Isak really pushed us up that table. If we hadn't signed Isak, they would still have a more expensive squad than we did. But yes, they've got some dafty in the dugout whose name escapes me, the caretaker manager, Aaron Dinks? Donks?
Danks. Aaron Danks. Danks.
Literally hadn't heard of him before the weekend.
Wrong vowel.
So everything points to we should smash these, no? So I'll come to you first, Kyle. Initial thoughts on this fixture. Is it a 3 point? It has to be 3 points.
You know what? It's very, I feel like it's deja vu from pre-Bournemouth at home. Like, everyone was saying, nailed on, 3 points, no bother. They've got a caretaker manager in charge. They've just been thumped in the last away game by several goals. We really struggled against them. And I get that kind of vibe because I watched them against Fulham the other week and Gerrard getting sacked was the most unsurprising thing of the season because they were absolutely dreadful in that game. But it just, I don't know, like, I know we've been playing well in that recently and I kind of help but be positive, but at the same time, it just feels like a pre-Bournemouth vibe. Oh, we're just going to walk over these, it's going to be near bother, go 2-0 up in the first 20 minutes and then we'll just hump them 4-5 now, no bother. And like, I remember the predictions for the show, I think, was like 4 and 5 across the board, and I don't even think we had 5 shots on target in that game, like, or 5 good chances. So, like, I don't want to be like the negative Nelly of this podcast, but like, I don't know. It just feels like there's just something there. Like, I know we want to beat Villa, and coming on to the predictions, I think we will beat Villa, but I just kind of help but feel like there's kind of something Villa I've got to prove or something where it's like a bit weird. I don't know. Maybe just me, but
I'm going to take that, Kyle, not as negativity, but as you just trying to be sensible here, trying not to get carried away, not to get arrogant. You know, it's still a game of football. We have to play well to win. But I'm going to go to Adam for not more optimism, but maybe a different view. How much are we going to beat Aston Villa by, Adam?
I really think they're there for the taking. I did sort of say this in the Spurs preview. I think I was very close to saying 2-1 win to us. I nearly said it. I said 1-1 to us, but it was very, very close. And Spurs were in a bad place when we went to see them. You can look at the result last week, Villa smashing Brentford at home, to think that there's some sort of revival there. There is. And yes, look, they have excellent players. They've always had really, really good players, but the problem has been knitting them together into some sort of coherent team, and that is the problem. So you've got an interim manager who, you know, look, I feel like that Brentford result was some sort of kind of like coming together, some sort of release. I think it's a lot easier to rally yourself, A, at home, B, when a manager's departed and they've just pulled out this result against a Brentford side who aren't very good on the road anyway. We found that out eventually. I just think that Villa at the minute, despite that 4-0 win, and to be honest, it was largely just a very, very good first half, wasn't it? Let's be honest. I think that they are still a team in purgatory who have confidence issues that are sort of just waiting for the Emery reign to begin. It's not quite started yet, so they are in kind of this purgatory situation of kind of in between two kind of management eras. And I just think that for them to come away from home on the road to a team to a club who's essentially one of the best club sides on form this whole calendar year, Newcastle United are a very, very good team. We are formidable at home. And I just think that whereas they're kind of a team that's still struggling with who they might be this season and they don't yet know under Emery, we are kind of this juggernaut hurtling towards the European conversation at the end of this year. We're well-oiled. We know what we're doing. I think we'll be fit. I think we'll want it more. And I just think it's too much of an ask for an Aston Villa side who haven't won an away game all season in the league. I do believe they got an away win at Bolton in the League Cup. I'm not necessarily counting that. For them to come up and disrupt a team like Newcastle, who has really strongly performed over the last few weeks, I just can't see it happening. I can't see them getting more than a goal on the counter-attack, if at all. But I just think we're going to create too much. I think we're going to cause them too many problems. They do have an issue at left-back as well. They're without both Augustin and Dina. They're obviously out without Diego Carlos as well. And I just think there is opportunity there in the back to get at them, to exploit them, to ask questions like we did with the Spurs defence, get in their faces. Yes, they're going to have a bit of threat on the counter-attack. They have lots of movement and dynamism and pace with that front four, if you include Bailey and Watkins wide out. And then you've got Buendia, who started against Brentford ahead of Coutinho. And then Danny Ings, who was there finishing a couple of them as well. But so we have to be cautious, maybe in a way that Everton were a bit dynamic and quick on the break as well. But we should have too much for them. We really, really should. They're the team that has to try and pull their socks up. They're the team who are trying to stop themselves sliding towards a relegation battle. We're the team in the ascendancy. We should dominate, and we should make it extremely hard for them to come away with any points this Saturday.
I love it. And to be fair, I appreciate both of your views there, because you're right, Kyle. This has got the potential to be. We walked into the Crystal Palace game and the Bournemouth game, and arguably the Everton game, expecting to smash these teams, expecting it to be too much for them. And all three of those games, obviously we won against Everton, but we made hard work of it. All three of those games didn't go the way we'd expected. Now, Aston Villa are probably going to come with the Bournemouth or the Palace approach and try and frustrate us and make it really difficult for us, because I just can't see them coming out the way that they did last week against Bournemouth. But yeah, I think I have to lean towards Adam here. We've just got too much going for us right now. And I think if you look at the league table, Man United are playing West Ham. You've got Chelsea away to Brighton. So that's not an easy fixture at all. They've got potential to drop points there. Bit of a grudge match for Brighton, who've lost all of their manager and backroom staff in the calendar year. I think it's a perfect opportunity for us to cement our place in the top four. And I think that's what Eddie Howe is going to tell the lads. That's how we motivate ourselves not to be complacent here. And I think we'll just have too much for Aston Villa, who, like you say, Adam, are just in a little bit of a purgatory, is probably the best word. I expect them to get better under Emery. They've got good players. They're nowhere near the bottom five that they've been in, and they've got themselves into a slump. Stuff's come out that they weren't happy with Gerrard as manager, and they kind of, the result at the weekend was a bit of a told you. We hated him and they were unshackled, and it was that whole got rid of the bad manager feeling. But that said, we'll talk a bit more about Aston Villa and the threat they pose, because they did win 4-0 last week. They ditched the kind of 4-3-3 that Gerrard had been going with, and I think, Adam, you're gonna describe what they did instead. And I think one of the things I noticed is that Watkins and Ings were both playing, which Gerrard didn't do very often. I think he tended to choose one or the other, whereas they just went for it at Bournemouth and stuck them both on and got the reward. So yeah, are Aston Villa more of a danger than we're probably giving them credit, Adam, or not?
Well, this is it. As I said, you know, I still think we should absolutely have enough to beat them, but we have to be wary of them on the counter-attack. We really do. I expect us to dominate possession. I expect us to take control of that game. But what we don't want, and actually, what we do want is we want the other team to have that threat of having another goal, because I just think it makes the game a lot more open. I think we've struggled against teams who have absolutely decided that they will hold out for a point and sit back and let us try and break them down with a couple of layers of blocks at the back. But I think they will be a bit more expansive. Their pace will ensure that. We have to be wary of their movement. They might, Bailey and Watkins might swap flanks, might come, you know, Watkins is just as adept going through the middle, as we know. He's been playing him out wide right against Brentford. Buendia, who is another player who didn't really get a massive chance against under Gerrard. He didn't really get a lot of starting berths under Gerrard, whereas he was thrown straight in against Brentford and he was part of that win. So I kind of don't expect Danks to make too many changes, because if you've just put out your first Premier League lineup and they've just smashed a team 4-0, I can't see him putting out a different side to that, even though Coutinho was left out, even though Ramsey was left out of that as well. John McGinn, who was Gerrard's captain, and obviously all the controversy coming out, you know, around the Mings being having the leadership taken away from him and how that's going to affect his confidence throughout this season as well. So there's a lot of kind of internal subplots as well with Villa, and maybe Gerrard going was good for a lot of players, but maybe some of the players actually preferred him there, so that it might still be a bit of a divided dressing room. We can't underestimate that. But most of their goals are coming from open play, and again, that's just their ability to use the flanks. They will try and use the flanks. They will use their pace out wide. They'll try and overlap. Look, Ashley Young and Matty Cash will be expected to push on, and we're going to have to be mindful of that. I can see, obviously, the likes of Miggy on that side protecting Trippier. Bailey, for me, I think is just a player who promised a lot when he arrived from the Bundesliga. He had a bit of a patchy start with injuries and form, but I feel like, you know, he's got 2 goals, 2 assists so far this season. He's going to be a threat. Watkins also has the same, 2 goals, 2 assists. And Ings is their top scorer with 3. However, 2 of them did just come in that last game. So they do have players who can threaten us, but as a team, they are very goal shy. And I think they've got around, it's about a goal a game, if only slightly less. So that there is, for them, that's not great. In fact, they've played 12 and they scored 11. So I don't think they're the free-flowing attacking team that last week suggests. I think there'll be a very, very different proposition away from home. But I'm really impressed with the likes of, you know, Douglas Luiz in the middle, who was a player that Newcastle are credited to have been looking at in summer. Yes, he does have a bit of a temperament, and that could be a possible notion to exploit. But I think his players are kind of, you know, double pivot alongside Deng Donker. They'll sit in, and they'll be very busy, by the way. But I think Luiz is a player who can, technically really good. I think he's really intelligent. I think he's due a big move soon. He's going to have to be watched, I think. I think and how he kind of dictates from deep, we're going to have to watch his influence on the game, certainly in that midfield battle. And a lot of Aston Villa's games, they are played in the middle third. They will be quite scrappy. It will be maybe a bit of... They have the potential, if they turn up, Si, to maybe be as difficult as Everton were, even though we kind of knew Everton weren't massively great. But I just think... if they're going to be trying to push on the counter-attack, our counter-attacks are very quick as well. We have a lot of good long ball distribution from the back, from the goalkeeper, from the back four as well, to get on the break, to aim for those pockets in behind what will be those marauding fullbacks that Aston Villa will deploy, and try and aim for that space where the wingers can exploit and push them back. And start to create chances when they're not prepared and when half the team is pushed forward. We do have the ability to quell all the threats of this team. I'm in no doubt about that. I think Aston Villa have a mountain to climb to try and even get a point at St. James's Park. We're going to be so formidable, but we just have to watch them on the counter, I think, and a few of the set pieces.
Very, very thorough and very interesting, Adam. You're right. We have got distribution and counter-attacking potential, which one of the talking points for tonight is Jonjo Shelvey, who made his first appearance on Sunday. But Kyle, I'll come to you about the lineup. You know, this team pretty much unchanged. I know Willock was in and out the side because of his illness, and the only other change was Murphy dropping out for Joe Linton last week. But... three massive fixtures. You'd think the lads might have needed a rest, but they've had a full week to recover going into this one. So are there any changes you would make, or would you just trust the same group of players once again to get the result here and to do a job against the threats that Adam's just described?
I think, in all honesty, I think that's the way Eddie Howe will go. I think we'll stick with an unchanged side, because I know a lot of people haven't said it, but I think Sean Longstaff played well enough to not get dropped. I mean, don't get us wrong, I think Joe Linton played really well on the right, because I think him and Willock were like doing this intertwining thing where they were taking turns in midfield and on the wing, which I think worked really well to deal with Tottenham's midfield. And Adam picked apart like Douglas Luiz being a major threat for Aston Villa in the 4-2-3-1 system that they seemed to play last week. We can counter that with a similar type of system. So if you've got Willock and Joe Linton intertwining, I think they'll struggle to deal with the pace in the midfield, as well as the class of Bruno. And even then, if you need a bit of creativity, you can bring Jonjo Shelvey on, since that's an option that we have now. But I think in terms of 1-11, he will stick with the same team. I don't see Matt Target making an appearance against his former side, as much as he'd probably like to, given their two main fullbacks are out and he's sitting on a bench at Newcastle. He's probably counting his luck at the minute. But yeah, I completely think he'll go unchanged. And I think with the formula that worked at Tottenham, will work against Aston Villa, because like you say, the high turnovers and the counter of a counter, we're very good at, and statistically one of the best teams in the league. So I think if Villa, quote-unquote, go for like they went for Brentford, they will encounter more problems, because Brentford away from home, as we've seen a couple of weeks ago, do tend to like capitulate. So I think Villa will be a little bit more cautious, but like... we can't punish them with the players that we have.
Well, that's exactly it. They might have put four past Brentford, but we put five past them the other week. You know, it's not a great measure of how much of a goal threat they are. I honestly think they will look at our defence and go, bloody hell, how are we going to get through that brick wall? And I mean, I'm including Dan Byrne. There's no point in talking about Mighty Target left back anymore. I think it's just Dan Byrne, that you can't drop him. He seems like such a great bloke as well. I don't want to see him dropped. And yeah, Sharon Botman, we haven't lost a game when they've been in defence. So just like, it's just a no-brainer that that back four stays. Trippier was excellent last week. It's not even a question, obviously. But you know, that the back five, including Nick Pope, obviously, is just too good. And I really think this is the sort of game where they might want to come and try and surprise us and try and get a goal. But if they look at what Brentford did when they came up here, they tried to play an open game. They tried to give us a game of football and they got absolutely punished. So I honestly think that they come with the Bournemouth or the Palace game plan and try and frustrate us. But I don't know if that works either, because you've got Miggy, who's in totally different form now. You've got Callum Wilson back in the team. You've got Joe Linton and Bruno, who are just looking so good. And Willock desperate for a goal. I just don't think you can sit back against this Newcastle team and expect to get away with it. So I think they've got a real decision to make about how to approach this game. And again, I love doing a preview where I think they've got a much harder decision about how to approach the game than we do, Adam.
I think the one thing that we do need to be wary of is that, you know, a lot of the preparation and research would have been, you know, looking at a Gerrard team. And obviously it's not a Gerrard team anymore. So it might be from a coaching perspective, from Howe's tacticals perspective, it might just be that little bit difficult to kind of read what necessarily this particular iteration of Villa are going to do. And it's sort of based on one game, really. I mean, we can look back at, you know, what these current players have been capable of under Gerrard and under Gerrard's system and his leadership. But obviously with him gone now, it does create a slightly different beast and maybe a bit of an unknown, and maybe there's almost not enough. It just might catch us out a little bit, I think. I still think Howe will be prepared for it. I'm saying that Howe will not have thought of this, obviously, but I just think because there's just one game of data with Danks as interim manager, caretaker manager, then it offers just that little bit of tiny bit of doubt about, well, do we know exactly what they're going to do? But I'm pretty confident they'll just put the same side outside. I really don't know why he would want to change that side unless he really, really has to. 4-0 win, pretty good performance. He'll just be wanting to try and carry out that momentum. So hopefully that's, you know, we're going to be well prepared for that, but it's just something to keep in mind.
Yeah, I mean, if they change the approach and really try to batten down the hatches, you could understand it. Like a 0-0 draw here would be a really good result for them. Caretaker manager would be buzzing with that, you know, a win and a draw in your first two games against the top four side as well. So, you know, we're the top four side that nobody wants to come and play against, you know. So I think you've got to think that whilst I agree with you, if it's gone that well the week before, it's hard to change it. But they certainly, in terms of the style and the way they approach the game, you'd like to think they're going to be far more defensive and letting us have the ball and trying to kind of frustrate us in that way. But as I said before, because of the confidence that's grown in this team since those early games where we were really worried about scoring goals and breaking teams down, I just don't think that'll be a problem. Kyle?
I think the major curveball is because Unai Emery's like notoriously a defensive coach. Like you've seen the defensive displays that they did against Man United in the Europa League and stuff like that, and against Bayern Munich and stuff last season. Like, Emery is known to set up teams very well. So if he's got any input, I know he isn't on the touchline, but surely he's having conversations with the staff to how his Villa team sets up. And it might be a little bit of a curveball that he wants them to show a little bit more defensive mobilisation going into him taking over and stuff like that. So, to be honest, I think it'll be more, they'll just let the caretaker do his thing until Emery goes in. But it might just be a curveball to throw in there. Like, if Emery does have impetus, he'll probably want them to defend and defend well at St James Park, because it is, like you said before, we are a very formidable team and very formidable at home. I think we've only been beat in the league off Liverpool and Man City in the last year at home. So it's like, it is a hard place to come unless you're Cambridge, but...
Don't, Kyle, don't.
Yeah, look, I mean, I think if any of these players have got anything about them, they'll know about Emery and they know about his style, so they'll be wanting to put in a strict defensive performance. They'll want to show that they can stick to a shape and do that kind of thing. But I'm just looking at that Villa side from last week. Like, if Ashley Young plays left back, I know he was quick in his day, but they cannot play him left back against Miggy, the in-form Miggy that we've got at the moment. He'll have a field day. So they might even be looking at that thinking, what do we do? The midfield, yes, Luiz does look like a tough character, but I still think that's lightweight compared to what we've got in midfield. I'm looking at Tyrone Mings and who's the other centre-half? Konsa. I think Wilson can give them an absolute nightmare of an afternoon at St James's Park. I just think there's so many places on that pitch where we're better than them that I'm so confident, and I've been confident most games this season, but this one in particular, I cannot see them scoring against us the way we're defending at the moment, the way we set up. I'd be surprised if they get a shot on target. Nick Pope's gonna have a very quiet game. He might have a couple of crosses to claim.
That's a bold call.
And yeah, I just think the only thing that could hurt us here is if we don't get that early goal, because the last few games it's been all about applying that early pressure until we get that goal, which has come off the last few times. If we get half time at 0-0, and especially on a Saturday afternoon 3 o'clock kickoff, the St James's crowd gets a bit expectant. You know, we've already become that home crowd, and that's not a criticism. You can't treat Aston Villa at home like a relegation 3-pointer anymore. You know, it's not that. We're fourth. We're expected to win these games. So if we're not winning by 60 minutes, people do get a bit frustrated. People do start to worry about the outcome of the game. So the nerves start to spread out the pitch. So there are ways that this could go, but I think it's unlikely. And I'm quite happy to kind of hang my hat on this being a textbook 2-0 or 3-0 win for Newcastle. I know I've gone a bit early in prediction there. I might change it in the next 5 minutes. Who knows? But
whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. In hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope. Because
I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
I think what I'd like to do next, lads, is take a trip down memory lane, because I think this will also help, especially you, Kyle, with the slight concerns about whether this is a banana skin. But we've had some wonderful, wonderful afternoons with Aston Villa at St James's Park over the years. I don't know who would like to go first on a memorable trip down memory lane. Adam, I think you've got the earliest of the memories for us, so why don't you go first?
Yeah, one of the earliest home fixtures I remember was a really exciting Monday night football back in the 1996-97 season. It was Newcastle 4, Aston Villa 3, and it was Dwight York getting a hat-trick at St James's Park, which for any visiting player to get a hat-trick you know, at St James's Park. I don't think that's happened too often. Maybe a few more times over the Ashley era than we'd wanted to, but that was just a really exciting classic Sky Sports Monday Night Football game of football. Couple of goals for Ferdinand. Shearer scored. Howie got a header as well, which was the fourth goal. But yeah, York put in an absolutely unbelievable performance that night as well. But I think my favourite Aston Villa at home fixture side has to be a little bit further forward, 3rd of November 2001, and it was the 3-0, which included two Bellamy goals and that side foot volley from an acute angle from Alan Shearer from the right-hand side of the box in front of the Gallagher, past Peter Schmeichel, his old foe, in goal, and he just... The flighted ball from Rob Lee, he caught it on the volley and the instep, went into the kind of top corner. It was such a strange and unique goal, the way he hit it. And he just sort of stood in front of the Gallagher as it was like pandemonium, just like, I think he said in previous interviews that he was just like knackered. That's why he didn't do his run, because he was just like absolutely knackered. But yeah. I think it was just special coming past Schmeichel, given that, you know, obviously all of those Newcastle versus Man United title challenges, Schmeichel played a big part in them winning the title over us. So it was extra sweet to score past such an excellent goalkeeper. But it was a couple of assists for Rob Lee that day as well. But yeah, I think that Shearer goal definitely got a contender for goal of the month if it didn't win it.
It must have done. I don't remember. It makes Alan Shearer himself's top five, I think, but yeah, it's in my top two or three. That was going to be my one, but I don't remember the game at all. I've got no recollection of either of Bellamy's goals. I could not find. I was going to look for a video for it before this podcast. There's no footage of it anywhere. You can see the Shearer goal in a million different places, but you cannot find those two Bellamy goals.
I love how Shearer talks about it. And he always, because I think it was in the season review tape after the DVD, whatever. Mm. And he was just like, to this day, I don't know why I've hit it first time. because it was just such a weirdly acute angle. Like, you wouldn't necessarily think, yeah, top, side foot volley into the top corner. Yep, yeah, I'll go for that one. Like, as he said, it could have just ended up absolutely anywhere, but he just caught it. So sweet. And as ever, as Alan Shearer should do, trust his instincts, it usually finds the back of the net.
It was just one of those perfectly, perfectly weighted balls over the top from Rob Lee, wasn't it? We've probably mentioned this podcast before, but me and a few of the lads played five-a-side with Rob Lee a few years ago. He was doing some sort of promotion for something called, I don't know what it was. It was something about like stag dudes get to play with a legend. So he was doing like a promotion day. So we got to pop along and play five-a-side with him. And this was Rob Lee. I think he was about 50 at the time, but it was obviously he couldn't move the way he used to, but it was every single pass, every single layoff was so perfectly weighted. It's like, I'm not used to, like, I've still play five-a-side now, but I get so frustrated when the ball's like a yard behind me, a yard ahead of you. Every single pass from that bloke was just perfect. Like, that's what a brilliant, brilliant professional footballer can do. Like, just the perfect pass every time.
What
exactly,
a legend, man.
Exactly where you want it. Like, Alan Shearer wouldn't have been able to volley a ball from many other players, but that pass was so good. It just had to be hit. It was there to be hit, despite him saying he doesn't know why he did it. But yeah, that was definitely my memory, one of my fondest, because it was definitely the first league game I got to go to. When I was a young lad, obviously season tickets were, there was a waiting list. It was very difficult to get the games. My dad was from Manchester, so I didn't have an obvious route to St. James's. So I'd been to a couple of cup games. I'd been to a couple of European games, but this was my first ever league game. And I got a seat in the Gallagher with my mate who had a season ticket. My mate, who is also, by the way, one of those glory supporting Man U fans. I won't mention his name, but went to school with him and he was a Man U supporter. But his dad got him a season ticket, so he went to Newcastle games despite supporting Man U. But he occasionally had the seat next to him spare, so I went along with him for the Villa game. And I'm sitting there going mental when Shearer scores that goal and he's like, "Whoa, you were very good." I hated that, but I'll never forget that day. I can't remember, I went to a couple of others that season. I think we beat Derby 1-0. And I can't remember the other one, maybe like Man City in the Cup or something. But yeah, great memories for me as a 12-year-old kid. And you know what? We've missed a load of other ones. So Kyle, I'm hoping you've got a different great memory of us thrashing Aston Villa.
I do, but the thing is, how do I follow that up? Just a total tribute to Rob Lee and that, and I'm about to berate a poor, well, not a poor, but I'm going to take us back to the championship season, Nottingham Forest away.
That I know team, where this is going.
There's just words that I can't say on this podcast that describe a certain Henry Lansbury. But he kind of cheated Newcastle out of a game in Nottingham in the winter, and then he signs for Aston Villa in the January, and then Villa come to Newcastle, and it couldn't happen to a nicer bloke. It really couldn't happen to a nicer bloke. He got slated all game every time he touched the ball, and it just ended beautifully with a goal going, ball hitting off him hitting the post and hugging the post as it trickles into the net, and like. He was giving it the big end when obviously Forest beat Wolf 10 or 9 men or whatever it was. But he sulked off St. James's Park after a very poor performance in a 2-0 win. And he wasn't laughing at the end. But I loved
that when he was kind of like just leant up against the post. There's the utter despair in his face when he realised that, no, not against Newcastle, not like this.
I thought when you said it couldn't happen to a nicer bloke, you meant the opposition manager who was in the dugout at the time, Mr. Steve Bruce, of course, with a team that had cost more than Benitez had spent on our team in that championship, and with a team that ultimately finished like 17th or something in the championship that year, didn't even get anywhere near the playoffs with a more expensive side than what we had. Well, you know, exactly. No, that's a brilliant one. The Lansby stuff's hilarious. Yeah, I'd forgotten all about that Nottingham Forest game. We finished with 9 men. Didn't Darlow save 2 pens as well?
Darlow saved 2 penalties. Dummett got sent off. Shelby got sent off.
Shelby, yeah.
We weirdly took the lead through Matt Ritchie. I honestly thought that we're gonna somehow win that game and drag it out, and then they scored 2 goals in the second half to beat when Lansbury's giving it the big one. But he went Aston Villa and all went tits up from. Haven't heard of him since. Shite.
Absolutely true. I couldn't tell you who he plays for, where he is, if he's even still a footballer. Probably not, because that night probably ended him.
We can't, it would be remiss of us not to mention the 6-0 as well, lads, I'm sure.
No, 100%. Yeah, that was another great one.
The Newcastle Twitter account did share the Joey Barton smash from outside the box, which was very, very satisfying. Although the keeper seemed to have a bit of sun in his face because it went right down the middle. I feel like you should have been saving that, but still pretty good. Pretty good fun.
Yeah, he let 5 others in. Was it the sun for those as well? Yeah, and Andy Carroll in his absolute prime with a hat-trick. It was the first game of the season after we'd been promoted? After
first home game.
Yeah,
we played first home game. Old Trafford first.
Oh, yes, I remember. How was that? 0-0, 1-1. We got a point.
I cannot remember.
Winging it now.
I know the year we got relegated, we went down and drew 0-0, but I don't know. I think we got beat. I'm not sure, but I can't remember at all. Any Patreons listening, let me know.
Answers on a postcard.
We'll move on from that. But class, another great one. I mean, yeah, even last season, the Trippier goal to win what was a massive, massive 3 points.
That was the best thing, because they were all celebrating, weren't they? That it wasn't a penalty, because it was a foul right on the line, and they were all celebrating, and the referee had sort of signaled that it was a free, and all of them was, in fact, no, the linesman had put his thumb up and said, like, yeah, it's a penalty. I think he flagged for the penalty, and then VAR overruled it. All the Aston Villa fans like celebrating because it wasn't a penalty. Then Trippier lines up this free kick just after taking the one against Everton like the week before, and he's just smashed one through the wall, threw into the net, and it's like, well, you might as well have had a penalty, lads, because like it's made absolutely no difference. But yeah, that was a sweet moment.
Yeah, another tremendous one. So, yes, with that in mind, Kyle, I'm going to come back to you first for your predictions for this one. You started the show a little bit apprehensive, a little bit kind of probably grown up about it. You know, it's not, no game is easy in the Premier League, as Steve Bruce used to say. But yes, come on, give us a prediction with your heart here.
Ooh, full of heart, full of passion, full of joy. I'll probably say a very good 2-0 Newcastle win. You've kind of sold us on the like it's not a Bournemouth kind of case. It's like Villa kind of a crumbling mess, and they've got some good individual players, but like Philippe Coutinho, I think he's got like one assist in 20 matches. Like that, he's just not performing. They've got a couple of good players, but I really think Newcastle need to get it Ashley Young. They really need to get it Tyrone Mings, because I think he's the most overrated defender England have, and they've got Harry Maguire in the setup. Like, that tells you all you need to know. Like, 2-0 win, and looking good doing it and staying in the top four, hopefully.
Love it. Adam, over to you.
Well, if Mickey Carling's listening, he's going to enjoy this next prediction. I'm going to go, I think it'll be another 3-0. I think we have enough to take them down. The defence is going to present opportunities, and I really, really think our players are going to take those opportunities. I back Wilson to get a couple, and I think we're just going to be too much for them. We're a really, really good side. I don't expect our run of form to stop on Saturday.
Yeah, the main thing is that you just, this could easily be a complacent performance, but I just don't expect that from an Eddie Howe team. I think we've also got players coming back like Shelby. We've got players on the bench who are desperate for a game. We've got Jacob Murphy and Ryan Fraser. I know they're not great, and I know, you know, that they'll still be chomping at the bit to get a chance. And if anyone doesn't play well, these players will come on. Hopefully Anderson's fit again, and he can also offer a threat from the bench. Chris Woods barely had any minutes, but you know, he might come on and do Tyrone Wings a bit of damage. He'd certainly
get used to serious damage.
He certainly gave him a lot to think about last season. Ultimately, we got the goal from the free kick, but he was a handful. Yeah, I just think we'll be too good here. I think they will put in a performance. I think, you know, this won't be a bad Villa side. There's some good players there, and I think they will be wanting A, to impress the new manager. B, there'll be that kind of evidence of the fact that they've got rid of Gerrard, who they seemingly didn't like, and they might play with a bit more freedom, a bit more passion. But I'm going to rein it in a little bit and go with you, Kyle. I think a 2-0 win. I think we'll get a goal at some point in the first half. We'll get to halftime. We'll you know, absorb a bit of pressure early second half. We'll see it out because our defence is too good. And then Botman will pop up the other end and score a goal from a corner, because he absolutely deserves to score from the amount of times he's had a chance from a set piece. So yeah, a nice 2-0 with Botman on the score sheet is my prediction. But yeah, I think that's about it here for the preview. Like I said at the start, this goes out every week on Patreon. If you would like to come in and hear a preview for each game, as well as loads and loads of other stuff. We do a review after each match. There's the match day podcast itself. Obviously, we record our thoughts throughout the day. So please join us if you'd like to hear more podcasts like this on our Patreon channel. But for now, thank you very much, Adam, and thank you very much, Kyle. It's been a pleasure, and this has been the True Faith Podcast.